Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Today is the third Dhamma talk of Series A. We are practicing Satipatthana Vipassana meditation. The reason we practice is we are always attacked by kilesa all the time. Attacked by lobha, dosa, and moha, unwholesome actions. Because of that attack, these mental defilements go into a physical and involve into our physical actions, bodily deeds, and also speech, verbal actions, and also mental actions, thoughts. All are deep speech and thoughts. Behaviors are always involved with these mental defilements. So bodily and verbal is a transgressive. We expressed. Okay. People can see, hear. That is the obvious level. The second level is it attack in terms of thoughts. These are the two that obvious. And there is also one we cannot see in terms of deed or speech or even in your own thoughts. They are not there. But sometimes when situation, conditions arises, when a certain situation or condition forced it, then these mental defilements can arise in all kind of forms. It could be in a physical form, verbal form, and a thought forms. Those are the latent mental defilements. So there's a latent mental defilements, and then mental defilement in terms of thoughts, and also transgressive in terms of deed and speech. To eliminate them, we practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation. And in here, as there are three types of mental defilements which express in a different modes. The first one, the transgressive type, which express in some sort of bodily deeds and verbal actions. These can be contained with sila, morality or precepts. This too is quite effective if you want to contain in terms of deed and speech, sila. That's why whenever we start our meditation, we always begin with taking precepts, because they are very effective to contain the physical and verbal and our defilements. So these precepts are the lowest level is 5 precepts. We all know it is refraining from killing any living beings, not taking anything that's not given, sexual misconduct, telling lies, and taking substances that could cloud the mind. Those are very important. If one transgresses these 5 precepts, or one of those precepts, it can take you to the full woeful states. That's why we really need to observe and guard these things. That's why we take these 5 precepts. At any level, at any time, all Buddhists take these 5 precepts. As a tradition and a habitual pattern, 1 in the morning, before they wake up, when they say prayers, they take precepts. And 1, when they say prayers before they go to bed at night, they take these precepts. That is the traditions of Buddhists. The purpose is to guard all so that we won't be able to be attacked by another defilement that comes of deed and speech. This is the foundation of our practice, our way, Buddhist way of life. You need at least these kind of things. And in here, when we are practicing, meditation practice in retreats, it's not only these 5. We go up to 8 precepts or 9 precepts, sometimes 10 precepts. We take it to that level. And some people say, why? Why do we need to take these precepts? Many questions asked. And some people, even in the 5 precepts, there's a lot of questions arises. So we need to clearly understand why we are taking these precepts. Even in the daily level, the 5 precepts, panatipata, virami, sikkhaparam, samadhiyami, I refrain myself from killing any living beings, hurting, harming. And here this hurting, harming, killing is not only applied to the humans, to every living beings. Because every living beings, every beings that have consciousness, they always cling on to their existence or life. They are always concerned, worried, afraid of being that existence taken away or terminated. Of course, at the human level, it is quite obvious, no need to talk about. But the same thing, if you really look at the animals, see how they behave and what kind of fear strike them when they are at that position of their life taken. Animals, birds, and even little insects. If you follow an ant, not to kill, but just follow closely with your finger to an ant. You see how it runs away, or how it fights back, how the fear inflict, just on the behavior of the movement. Every living being is always being fearful of the life or existence taken away. They may not be as intelligent as you are, but they also are scared. And knowing that attitude, we do not want to inflict fear and do any creatures. For that reason, we refrain from killing any living beings. Adinadana. Some interpret as just not stealing, robbing, but it extends to the point of taking anything that is not willingly given. So it covers everything: robbing, stealing, cheating, extortion. Planning, scheming, with scheming and taking due to technicality, in any which way. If you are taking anything that belongs to others, in which the owner is not willingly giving to you, that belongs to that precepts. I refrain myself from anything that is not willingly given. Some only stop at not cheating or stealing or robbing, but it covers every aspect of it. Kamesumisasara is and 5 precepts it used at Kamesumisasara. Okay. Refraining from sexual misconduct. That is quite obvious in terms of adultery. Having sexual activity with other people's wives, children, minors. Those aspects are under this Kamesumisasara. That again too, if you look at it, let's say, just put yourself in another person's shoes. How would it be like if somebody transgressed upon your spouses or children, male, female, it doesn't matter. You don't like it. Things that you don't want to be done to you, you don't do to the others. That's why it is important. This is where the 5 precept, this is refraining from sexual misconduct. But when you go to retreat, that third precept changes to abramacharyam. The practice which is not noble, we refrain from it. The practice or the actions that are not noble, that are not the actions of the noble person, we refrain from it. Which means we refrain from all sexual activities, not only sexual misconduct, in any form, whichever way you can think of, even just satisfying your own self. Because you belong to yourself, so then you are not transgressing anything. To that level, it extends during meditation practice. But it is not necessary to only apply to meditation practice. If you are a lay person, okay, you take 5 precepts. If you can and if you want, when you are saying these 5 precepts, instead of saying, I refrain myself from sexual misconduct, you can replace and change with, I refrain from all activities that are not of noble people. That's your own choice. You can still say the 5 and you can change the 3rd one in that way. And in here too, there are questions arises. People always ask questions. And that is a good thing, but one must know what it means and to what extent and why. But they ask as well, having sexual activity with your own spouse or by yourself, satisfying yourself, you are not hurting anyone, anybody. Okay. In other words, they don't like the idea of celibacy. Okay. This is too much. It doesn't hurt anybody, it doesn't harm anybody. Why do we have to follow this rule or aspect of celibacy? Especially, not especially, only in the West, these questions are asked. In the East, these kind of questions never arises. So in here is, what are we doing? Okay. We are practicing meditation. We are in a retreat mode. We are in a retreat mode. And what kind of practice are we doing? Mindfulness, insight, meditation. And what is the purpose of it? Okay, the purpose is to eliminate eventually all form of suffering. And immediately, what are you doing? To be able to aware of anything and everything that you are doing. Moment to moment, moment to moment. So if that is the framework, and if we are going to engage in this lawful, legal sexual activity, it will not conform. It will not conform to the requirement of the practice. In other words, you'll be wasting your time. Because when you do that, you won't be able to be mindful moment to moment to moment with precision and correctness. For that reason, we do not engage in any form of sexual activities or celibacy during those period. But as I said before, if one wants to, even under 5%, you can do that. And only for those people who ask that kind of question, that's a reason, because it is totally in conflict with what we are doing. It is out of the framework or the method that we are doing. For that reason, we do not engage. Musawada, the 4th precept. Musawada is some of the people interpret as not lying, refraining from lying. Yeah. That is at least one must do. Refraining from lying. But it covers all aspects of it. I refrain myself from false speech. The word is, I refrain myself from false speech. Under the false speech, lying is included. Lying, omitting the truth, purposely, with intentionally to hurt or to harm somebody. Or to save yourself from the danger that comes from lying. And also slander. Slander means words spoken so that two person, two group, two countries would split, create mistrust between them, breaking the bond between them, breaking the love between them. That's a purpose, and you try to put words in between. Some may be right out a lie, okay, totally not true. Some may be it's a truth, actually it's a fact, but you do it with the intention of breaking them apart. That's intention. Even though you are talking the true words, correct words, truth, but your intention is using that to break these people up, then it falls under the false speech, the hurting and harming. And also rude and harsh speech that falls under the false speech. You don't like to be talking to in a rude way, harsh way. So are the others. They don't like to be spoken in such a fashion. Even with the state of truth, correct, frank. Whatever you're saying is right and correct, and it is true. But if you present it and throw it with a rude and harsh manner, it hurts others. Because, again, it becomes to the intention. You purposely want them to be hurt. But sometimes, okay, some cases, they still talk harsh or rude words. But they talk these harsh and rude words not intentionally, not purposely to hurt them, okay, but out of emotional states. Okay. In fact, some even out of love, but from a habitual pattern, as there is no intention to hurt. Okay. It is said you do not commit this precept, okay, talking false speech. Example is given in the one of the sutra story there. There's a mother and a son. And something happened around that time, and it was the mother was angry. The mother was angry, and the son was going into the forest. In the olden days, go into the forest. And then the mother didn't want him to go, but he has to go, so he said, if you don't listen to me, maybe a wild buffalo gore you and you die. She just cursed like that. So very harsh and rude words. But the son went on into the forest and happened to meet the wild buffalo. And the wild buffalo was charging, coming charging to gore him. And at that moment he has nothing to do. And he just said, they call it saying the truth. Or saying something that he believes in. if my mother means exactly what she said, okay, then he met Buffalo God and died. He said, and if she means it, okay, so be it, that will come true. But if my mother doesn't really mean what she said, she's just saying out of frustration or anger or the situation, out of the blue, may I escape from this danger. And the buffalo stopped, turned around and walked away. It is said that that example is given as a support or evidence for some time you say these things, okay, without the intention of really hurting or harming. That's why it is said it doesn't fall into it. Regardless, if it happens once in a while, it happens with everybody under a certain situation, a certain condition, these kind of things could slip up. If you have no intention, you do not break that precept. And also another thing one has to be careful. One is some people become a habitual pattern. They are always talking in that kind of language, rude and harsh words. Habitual pattern. In other words, they say very often, not once in a blue moon under a certain set of condition. If that's the case, those people should behave. Because even though they don't have intention to hurt or harm the other person, that you are doing all the time, every day, eventually it hurts other people. The fact is it hurts other people. So if you fall into the habitual pattern, those people should behave, watch their temper, and change their pattern of speech. And if you happen to be one, okay, associating with these kind of people, skillfully communicate with them. I know you don't mean it, but still, it's becoming repetitive so much, other people get hurt, especially a boss or a foreman or a supervisor screaming and yelling and shouting and being lazy, this, that, all the time. It hurts the employees. So skillfully approach and try to draw their awareness and help. Whether it really changed or not is depends on them. But if they don't mean it, it's out of habitual pattern, they will slowly change. So that one thing should be keep in mind. That is musawara. And then suramiriya mityapamada thana. Some people just say drinking alcohol. They yet alcohol. But not just alcohol. It is any substance that could cloud their mind, that could cloud people who are using it, whether it's beer or wine or hard liquor or any kind of drugs, okay, cocaine or marijuana or heroin or opium. Of course, people also argue again, okay? Oh, you said it doesn't hurt or harm. Okay. Now I'm in a habit of drinking a beer by the end of the day. Okay. I'm not really drunk, just to take the edge off from a hard day's work. Oh, I drink a glass of wine with a meal. In fact, that's very good for my heart. It said that medical people said they will pull everything that supports what they want. Oh, I just smoke marijuana because there's a pain, or it makes me a little bit more relaxed, or I can't fall to sleep, and so on and so forth. These are the things. If that's the case, I'm very conscious, I'm aware, I'm not drunk. Okay, I don't hurt anybody, I don't harm anybody. How about this precept? So that kind of lines of question is quite often asked, quite often. But in here, the way it is said is, any substance that could cloud the mind. That's why how it is said is very important. I refrain myself from drinking alcohol. Okay, then you will be really engaging with that kind of question. Or even substance, I smoke marijuana, one joint, nothing happened. Then you will have to have a lot of engagement, debate, back and forth. But when you say not taking anything that could cloud your mind, it is in terms of the practice, and you are talking about this in terms of the practice. And what is this practice about? Mindfulness. To be aware of all your actions. To be aware of your physical actions, verbal actions, and even your own thoughts. Wrestling with your own thoughts, dealing with your own thoughts. To be able to deal with at all three levels, speech and thoughts, your mind has to be very clear, alert and awake. And if you take any substance, it will dull you, it will slow you down, the mood will change, the rate will change, the awareness will change. For that reason, you don't. And even on a high precepts level, okay, I'm not doing meditation. Even in general too, your awareness change. Driving without any alcohol and drive with one beer, drive with two beer and drive with three beer, you will see the difference. That's one way. And also, when you take, some people are quite reserved, quite shy, don't talk much, but after they have a beer or a glass of wine, their inhibition is lifted, they become talkative, they become even more social. In fact, because of that, they become more social and talkative, they like that, and they purposely start drinking it so that they can socialize. Their excuse is, oh, so that I can break out of my shell. Yeah, you can argue that way, but one thing is, remember one saying, whether you take a one clove of garlic or 10 cloves of garlic, it stinks the same. Whether you drink one or two or three, they are all drinking. But there is this, there is a potentiality of getting hooked into it. Slowly, one beer, you lose, you like it, and then it become into two, become into three. Especially with groups of friends and buddies, you drink more, and one day you find out you really drink and you don't even remember what happened. And slowly, it's not a one-day process, one-week process, one-month process. Years after years, you can become alcoholic. That is the possibility. And if you don't do it, all these possibilities are stopped. They cannot arise. If not, there still is a possibility. Prevention is better than cure. So, for that reason, it's best that we don't start at all. Of course, one can argue in many ways. But as a mindfulness as a practitioner, to keep your mind alert and awake and be aware. One must keep the mind very clear and away from any substance that could drag the mind down from awareness and alertness. That's why we refrain from taking any substance that would cloud the mind. And even on a five precepts level, we will not retreat. Once a person uses these substances, normally these people are very good people, very decent people. They behave their best so that they don't hurt or harm the social order or environment. In other words, they don't kill, they don't steal, they have no sexual misconduct, and they don't lie. Very upstanding, decent people. But once you drink it, what happens is probability rises enormously to break those four that you observe quite well. Before, you are very good, but under that influence, the probability of breaking those four, if it is right under your nose, is very, very high. And prevention is better than cure. For that reason, we don't and we refrain ourselves from that. That is the fifth precepts. And in retreat, we got number six. Number six is, after 12 noon, we refrain ourselves from taking any substance, substantial means. Why do we do that? Why is it important to do that? First and foremost, especially for monks, even if you are not in a retreat. What it is if you are eating three meals a day, four meals a day, late night and supper and so on, what are you doing? You are engaging a lot of your time to acquire it, to prepare it, to eat it. In other words, a lot of time went into that, feeding yourself. But when you don't take any meals after 12, you don't have to engage any time relating to that, and all these times are become available to you to practice. So you are here, a monk or a nun or a yogi who is practicing. All your times are freed up. That's number one. For that reason, we stopped it. And also, you'll find when you're practicing, your physical activities are a lot less than usual. You don't really need much energy to sustain. With that two meals, it can sustain throughout. On top of that, if you're meditating, when your mind is very still, or at least calm down from a lot of activities, the mind also burns a lot of energy. And here, these mental energies that you are going to burn are not burned. The mind is centered, calm, or still. In fact, they even produce energy, generate energy, if you have a very calm and still mind. We don't need that extra energy to support the body. There's another one, another factor. And also, if you eat the evening meals, or lay person in general, evening meals, it really sustain and support you. And lay person in a normal life, in the evening with the family people, what do they engage in? You can, everybody knows, and the evening activities are. And when there is a lot of these kind of foods and energy, that energy promotes to engage more in these kind of activities. So by not taking these evening meals, you don't have that energy and you don't go into this non-celibatic mode. Because that is the path, that is the direction we are going. We are practicing in the retreat mode. For those reasons, we refrain ourselves from taking meals after 12 o'clock. And the seventh one, okay, singing, dancing, also listening to songs, watching dances, and all these cosmetic makeups, perfume, flowers, adorning yourself, beautifying yourself, all these things. That's the number seven one. Again, too, we take these things because first and foremost, if you are doing this, it takes quite a lot of your time out of you. If you don't do that, you have spare time to practice, number one. Number two, we already explained it. We are practicing mindfulness, awareness, moment to moment, not superficially, quite deeply. And if we are engaging in these things, it is totally opposite to what we are doing. Instead of rising and falling, you will be smelling the Chanel number 5 or whatever makeup smells and so on and so forth, or sitting and watching, enjoying songs and dance and so on. So it is totally opposite to the work that we are doing. For that reason, we refrain from these things. It is refrain. Refrain. We didn't say you must not do it. We refrain ourselves. If you do, what happened? If you do, simply cause and effect. You said you want to practice meditation and you're watching an iPod or the song or this or that. It's opposite effect. Nothing is that you will go to hell or somebody will punish you. You will live with the whole consequences of what you do or what you don't do. That's number seven. Number eight, sitting, lying, using these high and luxurious beds. Again, the same thing. What? That will promote comfort, that will promote laziness. Because of that, we refrain from using these luxurious beds and places. You just plunk in. That's why we even have a chair called lazy white chair. Couch potato, watching TV and so on. It promotes laziness and along with the comfort. For that reason, we refrain it. So all these activities that we refrain are totally opposite to what we are practicing, which is mindfulness and sight. For that reason, we take these precepts and we observe these precepts. Number nine, okay, especially what we are doing is, it's not refrain, so it's not in a sense of a refrain or restraint. It's the, not all, but some teachers might put you to take that as one of the things that you observed. Not refrain, but simply observe and follow. In other words, you live at all time, at all moment, with an attitude and with a will and desire of love and kindness to all beings. That one is, not all, some monasteries, some teachers will insert it for you to take it. But it is not restraint of your faith, but it's something that you add on so that you can make your situation better. That one has all sort of opinions and points from various teachers and various people they can put from every point they can argue or present. But regardless, it doesn't create negative hurts or harm. And some take one more precept. That one is, you refrain from using any currency. Of course, we are already there, and during retreat, we don't use it. Currency is, you know, activities of trades. You buy, you sell, and actually using it. It is not that having credit card and money in a wallet under your bed in the retreat center. It is actually using it. But when you take that precept, you don't even touch it. That is, the precepts come to the point where you have to go to the prevention level. If you are touching it, the next thing is you can do it, so not even touch it. That's also a precept taking. So those are the precepts that we observe in retreat. And now, let's look at it in a different way. Okay. Hurting, harming, easy. Stealing, fine. Celibacy. Why is celibacy? One point. Celibacy is what? Sense, desire, touch, put up. Okay, touch. Sense, desire in terms of touch. All these activities are sense desire in terms of touch. And then refrain from eating food. What is that eating food? You have to eat enough to sustain, but beyond that, it is the sense desire in terms of taste. What is singing and listening, sense desire in terms of your ear sound. Okay. Watching TV, watching dancing and so on, sense desire in terms of eye. And then perfume and stuff. Sense desire in terms of smell. So, also luxurious beds, sense desire in terms of touch. So if you look at all these precepts that we add on in the retreat, is what? One of the nivarana. What is that? Karma chanda nivarana. Hindrance of sense desire. What are the sense desire? It comes through your eyes, it comes through your ears, it comes through your nose, it comes through your tongue, and it comes through the touch points of all your body everywhere. See, sense desire. So those precepts are there put in terms of starting to tackle the hindrance of sense desire, karma, chanda, nivarana, by avoiding them, by refraining them, you already cut out all the input from the objects of the sense desire. That is how they arise, and that's why it comes into it. The other one was one, we explained one after the other. based on logics and reasons and social environments and traditions. But in a stricter sense, we cut down the input of the objects that produce sense desires through the five sense door. Not only that, taking some of the drugs created a deluded mind. It promotes of our most sense desire through your own mind, go into the fantasy land and imaginary land. So one should understand like that too. These precepts, they are the foundation of our practice. Without these foundations, you cannot build anything on. Without a good foundation, if you build a house, it will collapse. But if you have a very strong and good foundation, your house will stood tall and long and strong for a long time. That's why these precepts are very important for to a meditator. That's why all the yogis should understand with clarity what are they, why are they here, for what reason. Without that foundation, we cannot move on. So may all of you be able to observe these precepts strongly and firmly, and may you be able to build the house of mindfulness and insight about it as soon as possible.
Sadhu, 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 Buddham Pujami. Buddham Pujami. Sangham Pujami.